You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
Well, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Hey, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Feel it, you feel it?
It's a faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who? A fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Who are you?
Yes. I'm glad you asked that again. Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage, and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe. Now please, get off this planet while you still have a choice.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Earth Station Who. That's right, folks. We are back, and we are going back to the Tom Baker era, Doctor Number 4, or as people have been saying, you know, this month, May the 4th be with you. So, of course, they're only talking about Tom Baker. You know, is there any other thing? Exactly. What else would they be talking about? It's just crazy, what, you know, to think about Doctor Who and, you know, some other small little thing out there with, you know, TIE fighters. And that's so yesterday. But Doctor Who is now. And, well, no, it isn't. We're just waiting just as much as Star Wars fans are. So, but we are going to be talking all about The Invisible Enemy, which features Leela. And it also features the first appearance of K-9.
Woo!
So, yes, you can even see the robot dog breaking down in the very first appearance of him. It's awesome. So it's a really good introduction and an interesting enemy, and we'll be talking all about it. And we've got a great crew here to talk all about it. First, our guest this week is, of course, Mr. Will Nix.
What's up, everybody?
Welcome, sir. Welcome to the Doctor Who side of the station.
I know. It's more like Earth Station wear for me. So.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. You just like fade in and out between all the different shows that we got.
Exactly. I love it. Thanks for having me on, Mike.
Dude, anytime. Anytime. It's always great to have you. And of course, we have our regulars, too. We have, of course, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, my friend?
Oh, ready to take a fantastic voyage.
Oh, very much so. And, of course, the lovely and talented Mary Ogle.
Hi, everybody. It is fantastic to be here.
It's really good to have everybody back together. And, you know, it's kind of ironic. We're talking about a story that features an intelligent virus.
Right.
You know?
Called the Invisible Enemy.
Exactly. And, you know, of course, you know, they thought they had that under control, too. So, hey.
Yeah.
Not that we're getting into anything or anything like that.
No,
but it's really interesting that we have this story at this time. And we have actually our friend of the show. We had Eric Paul Johnson originally scheduled to be in this episode also. And he actually picked this story for us. Eric is, of course, he is the co-host for the ELO Face the Music podcast. He is the co-host with, of course, Eric Witsensen, who's been on our show a couple times. And so, you know, definitely could find his podcast, you know, up there, and they review episodes of Electric Light Orchestra song by song by song as they came out on the albums. And they're just going all the way through. They've already made it through Xanadu, folks. That's a pretty big step for, you know, ELO fans.
And they survive.
I know. It's pretty amazing. You know, they did go to Xanadu, so... Woohoo, roller skates and everything. And that's a picture if you ever knew what these guys looked like. So it's pretty awesome, though. But we definitely would love to hear from you guys at home. What are your thoughts on The Invisible Enemy? Did you see it originally? Did you like it? Did you not? Please let us know at earthstationwho@esonetwork.com. We'd definitely love to hear from you guys. Wow, this is going to be a fun, exciting episode to talk all about. You know, I'm looking forward to it, and there is no real Doctor Who news to talk about. No news on the new series, nothing about any actors or actresses, you know, but definitely, you know, keep Doctor Who in your heart, and thank you all for joining us, especially this difficult time that everybody's having. So please definitely check us out, you know, to help support us, help, you know, do listening to us continue and continue and continue. It's pretty neat that you guys are here still, because Doctor Who is awesome. And speaking of awesome, let's go back to October 1st, 1977. It's the second episode of the season with Leela and Tom Baker. And this just was the story that actually followed the Horror of Fang Rock. So this is the Hinchcliffe era of Doctor Who. And no,
it's actually the first Graham Williams.
Right. Because he did the last one.
Yeah. It's the first one with Graham Williams. So that's a big deal too.
Yeah.
Because there's not as much blood and guts.
No, but you
got a lot of stabbing.
You got a lot of stabbing in this one, which is even better. So it's pretty awesome. Yeah. Leela was, you know, at her savage-ish. And because she was rejected by the virus. So we went to the invisible enemy, and we got to go to Titan. And we also got to go to the asteroid belt with really bad special effects, folks. You know, it almost looked like they put that satellite, you know, with on the asteroid with, you know, the space station on it. And just like, it's like, let's get a thing of Play-Doh and just put a red cross on it.
And hey, that was high end. Okay, come on.
For Doctor Who at the time, so
we had this spaceship on a string.
Oh,
this is like a really ambitious story, though. Like most stories have a couple of moments of big special effects, but this story demands a lot of special effects, and I think some of them work pretty well, and some of them don't. And I think the special effects department, understandably, was just spread really thin on this one, because
you had him looking through his mind for things. I mean,
you go from having this like space 1999 sort of base on Titan's moon and all the special effects that are involved with that and the shuttle landing and all that kind of thing. You go from that to, you know, this weird virus thing inside the doctor's head, and certainly by the end, you know, when they finally realize, you know, Personify or whatever, the virus, it's you could tell the budget's just spent. And
you mean the giant prawn?
And plus all the work they had to do with K-9 on top of everything else. So I give the special effects team a lot of slack on this one, because I think they were. I mean, it's one thing for most Doctor Who stories, but for this one, I think maybe if it was done during Hinchcliffe's era, he might have been able to control this a little bit better. But I think Graham had no idea, like, how to dictate a story as far as restricting certain things because of budget and special effects reasons and allocating.
Yeah, they were trying. It's all kind of endearing, really.
Well, you think about all this, you get K-9 out of it, which is, I mean, a beloved companion. No matter what has happened, you look back and you get that. And as a kid watching it, that was just cool. Having the robotic dog companion.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, as a kid, you know, you don't even notice half the bad special.
Oh, gosh, no, the special effects were awesome.
Walking through his head, it's pretty cool.
It did actually look like they did take a lot of the props from Space 1999. It must have been a couple of the studios over or something like that.
It's like, here, let's do this and just call it something else right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Roger Corman it up pretty hard.
The shuttle is very Space 1999-ish.
That, or, you know, the lights they had on the station were the lights from Space 1999.
Yeah.
They weren't even hiding it.
Well, I don't think it was the same team, obviously, but I think Gerry Anderson's, obviously, that influence on British science fiction television was pretty popular. So they already knew how like a space station on a moon looked, you know, and so they could base it on that and they could use that sort of thing. I mean, Space 1999 did end in 77. So you're right. It is kind of about the same time as this one starts, but
I doubt it was the same team at all.
No, and I don't think it was the same team, but I just think they you know, the homage to it.
Influenced by it.
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah, I mean, even the uniforms kind of, you know, were reminiscent of that. It's almost like they were like, well, that's what a moon base looks like. So
this is what space looks like. Yeah,
exactly.
This is what space looks like.
So, and unfortunately, they had no idea what a personification or realization of a Germanic virus entity would look like. So they sort of just said, well, it looks like a big old prawn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So, and even the clear nose and everything that it was just like, oh geez, as it grew bigger and bigger, it's like, oh wow. But yeah, I did think it was ambitious. And I loved the doctor and Leela dancing as they were being flown through the, you know, yeah, the bloodstream and everything.
Kind of swinging each other around.
Exactly. That's so Tom Baker, though. I mean, that guy, you talk about loving life on every episode. You don't ever see, do you ever think, can you think of anyone where he felt like he just phoned it in? Yes. I can't.
Yes. Later.
Yeah. Later.
Much
okay,
later. But, yes.
Much later.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know what I'm getting at, though.
Yeah, you compare this Tom Baker with a couple more seasons, and yeah, you'll see the wear and tear on him. But yeah, you're right. He's not feeling it yet. I know that he and Louise had some issues in the beginning. So that doesn't show here. I mean, obviously the character wise, they've got sort of a disconnect. But it's obvious that he, even though he dismisses her several times, and insults her right to her face, he still cares a lot about her. You know, he's torn. I mean, he could have easily just given in and killed her, but I mean, he fought that off until it wasn't possible for him to do anything else but go into a coma.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty touching. I like Leela in this a lot. I think she gets a lot to do, despite the fact that, you know, the reason that is given that the virus doesn't want her, that she's rejected, is because she's like stupid. But
yeah, the whole implication is that she's not intelligent enough to be infected by a virus, which actually is infuriating because she's such a great character.
But they do kind of like, you know, band-aid it by saying like, oh, because she's more of a hunter and she acts on instinct and that kind of thing, rather than just basically say, yeah, she's not intelligent.
Well, exactly. Hell, they even took the robot at one point, you know, beyond her, you know. It's just like, it was bad. And there was just, it was an interesting story. I liked some of the characterizations and, you know, how easily it was to transfer the, you know, the disease from one person to another, you know. And that was interesting. And of course they weren't wearing face masks. So that's why
we
it was happening.
Practicing social
distancing. That's what it is. You know, if they get the guidelines out in time.
Exactly. If they were 6 feet apart, they would have been okay. Come on.
Yeah. Cause that lightning effect would not have reached that far. It only has like a 4 foot range, and a face mask would definitely stop that.
Definitely. No, again, though, I hate to keep going back to K-9 though. I mean, talking about overshadowing companions as a kid. I mean, that's who I wanted to hear from.
And it's amazing too. Yeah. Cause when they put K-9 in this, the original plan was not to have him stay past this story.
Right.
But they spent so much time and money on him developing him. They were like, well, we're going to have to like get our money's worth. So he stuck around, even though, and you can tell in the next few stories, he's kind of forced in and they have to, a lot of times, like, find an excuse for him to stay on board the TARDIS.
Well, he's R2-D2.
Well, exactly.
Well, he's more than that, though. I mean, he's...
I'm just saying, though. I mean, he's... But you can see where they get the idea, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he's the mechanical owl, right?
Right.
Well, exactly. And that's, you know, because of the popularity of Star Wars, because Star Wars had come out, what, 4 months before this.
Yep. The phenomenon is really just taking off. I mean...
Exactly. And so, you know, oh, let's get a cute robot in our show and, you know.
In our movie. Yeah.
Exactly. And at least K-9 didn't go, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, you know.
So. Hey, now back off some Tweaky, man.
Yeah.
I was thinking more of that bad dog on Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Awful.
One that had a monkey in it.
Yep.
Yeah. Actually, I thought it was interesting that K-9, he has a personality right from the beginning. I mean, he's actually...
He's got attitude right from the beginning.
Yeah. Yes. I thought that was great. I mean, he's actually not like your run-of-the-mill robot. He's not actually so cutesy that he just turns you off. He's got a definite personality there, and I love that.
No, that was really nice about it that, you know, K-9 doesn't... what you remember him from it. You don't just go, what was that robot, you know, thing? Because he does have a personality right from the very beginning.
And he's formidable. I mean, he can take out, like, relatively a few guys anyway.
Yeah, it was awesome to watch him do, you know, take out a cracked wall. It was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, he's helpful. Yeah, watching the styrofoam fall was quite...
It's always fun on Doctor Who to watch parts. It's like, oh, wait, look.
Yeah, I was watching the bonus materials on the DVD, and unfortunately, that was the second take of the wall. The first take, the wall was, you know, was sealed up pretty well so that you couldn't really see the seams. But something happened, and they had to film it again, and they didn't have time to really reseam it. So you can really tell, like, even before he fires, it's like, I know what chunk's going to fall off.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Wonder where it's going to fall off.
And what's amazing is that she goes to the trouble of asking K-9 to break the wall so they have a barrier. And as soon as the virus men, that's what I'm going to call them, their virus men show up, she runs away from the thing. She goes behind another podium. I'm like,
she doesn't stay there.
No, she doesn't stay there at all. I'm like, wow, that was a lot of work for nothing.
Mm-hmm. So I don't blame her for not staying there because it wasn't going to offer much cover.
Exactly. You know, and it's like, the cover that they should have done, you know, they could have done a bigger barricade so they couldn't just step over it. But then to K-9, every barricade was huge. So
it's gosh, yes. Yeah. How am I getting over this? All right, someone pick me up.
When he went into the TARDIS, they cut away so they didn't show him trying to maneuver over the ridge there at the door.
What's K-9 doing now? He's just plowing through something again. It's just what he does.
He's still trying to get into the TARDIS.
It was fun though that, you know, I'd like the character of K-9, and he was the most memorable out of all of them. And, you know, seeing this one, I haven't seen this one probably in like 15, 20 years. So it was nice to rewatch it again, because I had forgotten. I didn't remember that the professor survived. I thought that's why the doctor got K-9 is because the professor became, you know, one of the bug disease guys. Which he did, but wasn't able to be cured.
Even at the end, when Leela says, we have to return K-9 to the doctor, I thought the doctor was just going to turn to her and say, no, we don't. And it just, like, take off with him. I didn't
know he was going to actually. Mine. Someone gave me a space robot dog. It's mine.
But instead, like, he does go back, and the doctor's like, oh, you could take him. And the doctor's like, I don't know. And Leela's like, yes. So it's kind of interesting that the doctor, even though he's fond of him at times during the story, he kind of resents him after this.
Well, he also doesn't. I mean, he's not much for companions, period. And it's funny that Leela pretty much hires her replacement. So.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, and I love, you know, but like you said earlier, though, K-9 is very formidable, you know, not only smart as a robot, you know, be it with the intelligence, but has the weapons to be able to, you know, help the doctor, you know, because the doctor, of course, doesn't shoot. And, you know,
K-9's not afraid to.
Yeah, exactly.
K-9's gonna kill it.
Exactly. And that's the cool thing about it. So I think it was pretty awesome to see. And I loved it. I just, you know, I thought it was cool to see it, you know, the villain. Was, you know, exactly. But, well, exactly. And it was just, overall, it was just like, okay, that's what we had to deal with. And, you know, the lightning storm around the spaceship. That was really bad.
That was just really bad.
I thought it was cool looking. I'm sorry. I thought it was cool looking. For the effects that they have at the time, I gave them a lot of leeway on that. Like I said, in the beginning, I thought they were pretty much on point doing most of the special effects. They were comparable to what you were seeing in an Anderson production, like UFO or Thunderbird or even Space 1999, really, with just probably half the budget. So I thought that was decent. But it's towards the end when, they're actually in the doctor's head, and some shots look awesome, and then some just look like they just put like painted trash bags all over the place.
Hey, that was the effects budget. Okay. So.
It truthfully, a lot of it was green screen at its best.
Yes.
And it was neat because I watched the extras also, and some of those, images were hand painted. It was pretty awesome. But, some of it was just, yeah. And, you could see like the pixelation around, it wasn't good.
Well, the other thing is that this episode and, several others, these are ones I watched as a child. And I never felt that it was above my head or anything like that when I was watching it. And it's that mixed audience that you're trying to grab. I'm new to this show, but I'm sure y'all brought it up before. But, it's just that attitude of who was Doctor Who going for? What was the show aimed at? And I felt it was aimed toward me when I was a kid.
Well, and that's what it was aimed for. And that's the cool thing about it.
Leela's outfit was not aimed at kids.
No, not at all.
It was aimed at the dads.
Like a lot of great kids shows, there's always something there for mom and dad.
And it was aimed for me. Because when I saw this back as a teenager, it was affected me as well. I did not hide behind the couch.
To this day, it affected him.
It affected him. Leela still has an impact on him.
It's true.
Oh, I know Mike Gordon, so I do know what kind of effect it has on him.
Oh, boy.
Yes, it was just last year, this time last year. Was
it 2 years ago?
I think it was 2 years. Was it 2 years ago? Man.
I think it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, you're probably right. 2 years ago.
Because I think Tegan was last year.
Yes, Atlanta. You're right. But that was a dream come true. Yes. A teenage dream come true, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I think outside of, the outfit and everything like that. I think as a character, it's my love for her is justified just because I think she really holds her own in this story. Even though, yes, they do kind of insult her intelligence, they give her enough characteristics that she's not sidelined. She has a lot of good moments. And the doctor needs her. Even so much as he has to take her into his head with him because he needs her tracking skills.
Mm-hmm. No,
which
very
I thought
true.
Was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and she doesn't she's insulted a lot in this one, but she's just kind of like, yeah, whatever. And she goes on and does what she's going to do. She doesn't really care what they think of her.
And ultimately, her solution is what they do. She's like, just blow it up. And he's like, nah, I can't really just blow it up. No, I'm going to just try to just blow it up.
Just freaking and blow it up.
So she's your stereotypical, pull over and get directions. And no one wants to listen.
And it is. And the great thing about it is she's the hero of this one in a lot of ways. And, the doctor, of course, is the one who, figures it out at the end, but she's the one who comes up with the solution. Like you guys said, blow it up.
I'm very curious to know through the regenerations if there's still a little tiny Leela dagger in his brain. Because for some reason, the doctor and Leela clones disintegrated completely in the brain, except for her bracelets and her dagger.
Mm-hmm.
They made a point to leave those behind, and I was like, okay, so does the Doctor still have a little tiny Leela dagger in his brain? I'd like to think so.
Next year's episode, it kills the Doctor.
What's killing the Doctor? Some kind of metal object inside his brain.
It seems to have been there a long time.
We have to go back inside.
Oh no!
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 See, that's a 40-year plot hole that needs to, and I say that in quote, and I say that in quotes that needs to be resolved at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, get on that, Chibnall.
Come on, Chris. You're falling on us. Pretty awesome, though. That is pretty cool, though. Yeah, I think, you know, it was interesting to watch this and, you know, see, you know, what kind of lore comes out of it and stuff like that. And that was what made it really cool, you know, from it.
There's also an interesting point, speaking of the Doctor's brain, and I'm sure this has all been retconned since then, especially with what we know now of the Doctor's origins. But in his brain, he's got something that he can connect to the Time Lords directly with. I mean, it's built in his brain.
Yeah, it's just thinking about this. I wonder how much of this is an homage to A Fantastic Voyage.
Oh yeah, I mean,
very much so.
Yeah, which is another one of my favorite sci-fi. As a kid, and talking about choice outfits.
Yeah, right. playing the role of Raquel Welch in this adaptation is Louise Jameson. No.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean. Can we get her out into the swimsuit? Oh, yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Especially the scenes with the antibodies attacking.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, that's... So, yeah, it definitely, you know, got a lot of Anderson Space 1999 stuff in it. It's got a lot of Fantastic Voyage in it. But, I think it still works. I think the character of is it Professor Marius? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's fun. And he and Tom, the actor that plays him, Frederick Jaeger, right?
Yeah.
They have chemistry like right off the bat. It's almost like they're drinking buddies or something.
Probably were.
he's great fun throughout this whole thing.
I think that's the ultimate word for this episode. It's just fun. It's really fun throughout the whole thing. And I mean, who cares that the sets are bad?
Isn't that where a lot of modern Who kind of messes up, though? The fun is gone, you know, at least there for a while.
Yeah, it's kind of refreshing that you don't get too profound in some ways, you know, that there's not a lot of angst going on, you know, there's not a lot of self-recrimination or all that crap. It's just, they're just running around, having a great time, trying to solve the monster mystery.
Yep.
And it's fun.
Well, did you also see a certain return in this episode? I don't know if you're getting the guys, you know, noticed. This was when they went back to the original control room.
Yes, yeah. Right away. Leela had never seen it before.
Right.
She's like, why are we in a different room? And he's like, this is the room.
Exactly.
I guess the other one's being worked on or something. He says. And then he like starts complaining that the computer like can't do any other colors but white and black.
Yeah.
But I'm like, the room that you just had was not white or black.
Well, exactly. It was like, wait a minute, you just came from a wood paneled room.
I love that room. I wish they'd kept that.
But I heard the wood kept on warping, you know, when they weren't filming and everything. And that was what.
That might be true. But I mean, you know, especially with the day and age now of what we can watch this with, you know, I mean, it's on Blu-ray, I think, isn't it? Or at least it's on, you know, I watched it on DVD. And I mean, the white is just not white anymore. It's so filthy. To look at the inside of the TARDIS. It just doesn't look as streamlined and cool as it did when, you know, Hartnell had it.
Oh, definitely not.
I don't know if they ever placed it out. I think that's the same, like...
The dingy, yeah.
I think that's the same dingy console room.
Still smoking, smoke damage from or anything. All the cigarettes. And...
Yeah, it's all yellowed and...
Yes, you know,
it's
yes.
Like, ah.
Nicotine.
Exactly. Yes, kids, this is what could happen to your lungs if you...
Exactly, you could look like the inside of the TARDIS.
Exactly.
I also have to say too, I mean, I think we've talked a little bit about Tom. Tom's great in this and he's having a lot of fun, but I there's a moment where, once he confronts, the nucleus, and in his brain, and he's sort of, you know, doing the banter as the doctor does, just sort of treating him lightly and everything like, oh, I've got to get rid of you. You're not supposed to be here, that kind of thing. And the nucleus says, I can control time now, thanks to you. Like, Tom's face gets all, like really serious. Like, oh, this has gotten really serious now. Like, mm-hmm. I was treating this lightly, but the implications that you can create, that you can breed through all of space and time now, he's basically saying, this stuff just got real. Mm-hmm. That's his, you know, later this would be the, you know, David Tennant, like, you know, mean doctor face, I think.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, things just got real now.
Yeah. Like, you know, there's a point where there's fun and games, but then, you know, and I give you an opportunity, but if you go too far, I'll take you out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I gave you a chance. You lost it. No more.
And so, to be fair, he does give the virus a chance, even afterwards. But yeah, he's pretty proud of the fact that, you know, and pretty happy with the results of just blowing it up.
Oh yeah, of course. That wonderful, you know, Titan base is gone. Yeah. Boof. And that was awful. The little flames coming up at the end.
Like, oh, yeah.
It was just like, oh, dude, no.
So, I mean, outside of Canine, though, does this really have that much of a lasting impact?
Nope.
That's what I'm saying. You know, a lot of episodes, you can talk about a lot of episodes and how they've had, you know, how they tie into the show later on, things like that. Outside of Canine, I mean.
Yep, Canine is it.
That's not a bad legacy.
No. I mean, it's just kind of a fun episode that,
yeah,
not, you know, for its own sake, and that's fine.
Oh God, we haven't even talked about the makeup that they did with the people who got the virus.
I was avoiding that. Virus. It was so bad.
Oh, that was horrible.
It was really bad. The hairy hands.
Exactly.
I know.
It's like, oh, the doctor has hairy palms. Here. Watch out, folks.
Oh my gosh. It's like Mike with Glila. So.
Was that supposed to be an inside joke? Is the makeup team chuckling in the background?
I know, right?
Yeah. And the scales on their faces, and it's like, yep. It's like, all right.
Enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, all right, I'm done with it. Yeah. So, all right. Any final thoughts before we go ahead and rate this? Well, okay.
Go, Canine, go.
Okay, there you go. 1 out of 5 TARDISes in honor of Eric for suggesting this episode. All right, Will, you get to go first.
I have to give it 3.5 because, you know, K-9 takes it there. I'm a harsh critic, and like I said, didn't have much other carry on other than this. It was a fun episode, don't get me wrong, but 3.5 TARDISes.
Okay. Mikey?
I think 3.5 is actually pretty fair. I like this one a lot, but I can't quite give it a 4. It's not, you know, it's not great, but it is a lot of fun. It's not, you know, it's not as bad as the effects are, especially if you, you know, just can ride through those, because the story is pretty fun and the characters are pretty fun, and Leela and the Doctor are great.
Okay.
Especially coming from after, you know, the doom and gloom of the horror of Fang Rock. This is such a nice, like, uplifting tale for them.
Yeah, I could see that. All right, Miss Mary.
Let's see. Well, I think I will give it a 3.75. I'm going to give it an extra 0.25 because I just really love Leela. She's so great. She's great with the doctor. She gets a lot to do here, and I'm really happy to see her get to shine. And plus, you know, actually the characterizations here were pretty good. The story was pretty good. And, you know, it doesn't matter about the bad special effects and the bad makeup. They just make it all the more endearing. So, I mean, this is one of those ones you can really go back and enjoy just for its own sake.
Yep. Agreed. Agreed. I'm going to give this one a solid 3. I would have given it less, actually, if it wasn't for K-9. Between K-9 and Leela throwing knives, it was awesome. You know, that would have gotten a 10 right there. But the special effects pulled it down big time for me. And a lot of it actually took me even out of the story at times. That's how much I was like laughing at it and not paying attention to the rest of it. And, you know, like the guy who had to put on that really big sun visor to hide that he had been infected by the aliens. So exactly. It's just like,
I'm like, why did he go to the, like, I'm sorry. I just reminded me because at one point they go to the hospital, whatever. And she's like, what's wrong with you? And he's like, oh, my eyes got injured. She's like, off to the eye doctor to you. And he goes.
And he actually went. Yeah.
I know. I was like,
what was the point of that?
Well, he did infect the eye doctor there. So
yeah. I think optometrist. Watch out, folks.
So I think that did end up helping him, but I was like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah, it was just like, it didn't make
just
sense.
Been like, these are my shades, man. Yeah. There's it's nothing cool wrong with me.
Why are you harshing my mellow, man?
It's the harshing my mellow.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I don't know. It was, so yeah, I think a solid 3. So that's what we thought. We definitely would love to hear from what you guys thought. EarthStationWho@ESONetwork.com. Please tell us what you thought on this one. Eric, once again, hopefully you're listening and, you know, you enjoyed our views on this. And, you know, please write us, at least tell us what you thought about it. Sorry you couldn't make it for this episode. But, you know, it was cool. And thank you, by the way, to everyone who has been commenting on why we didn't like the gunfighters last time. Man, did we get some heat on that one.
Did they send it to us in lyrical form?
Oh, they did. They sang it to us, dude. At the tale of the OK Corral.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I still get chills over that one. Ah. But folks, join us here again next time when we are going to be going back to Big Finish. That's right. We are going to be looking at The Diary of River Song Volume 4. Which features someone who we just talked about in this episode. That's right, folks. River meets the Doctor, but the 4th edition of him. Pretty bum, awesome. Bum. Bum, bum, bum. And actually tying into this, Mikey, you had some Doctor Who news for Big Finish?
Yeah, well, for those people who want more of Tom Baker and Louise Jameson and John Leeson, you can go right now to Big Finish. You could pre-order Shadow of the Sun, which is going to be available it should be available by the end of May, they say. This was, I think Mike, you and I talked about this. This was, in fact, filmed under lockdown, under quarantine. So,
yes, it was.
So you've got all the voices. They were separated, but they were still recording. You could see, if you go to the Big Finish site, you can see images of them all on whatever they were using. I doubt it was Skype. It was probably Zoom or something. Yeah, you can pre-order that. It's really cheap right now. You can get it for under $10, at least the digital copy. So, and the CD's not that bad either as far as price goes. So I've certainly signed up for it. So I'm looking forward to more from the Dr. Leela and K-9.
There you go. And Big Finish is taking it away. That's pretty darn awesome. So definitely worth checking out. We'll have a link to it up on our show notes. Let's thank our crew for being here tonight. Mr. Mike, you made it through another one, my friend.
And as always, it's my pleasure.
And of course, Will, thank you so much, sir.
Always and anytime. You know that. Enjoy this too much.
Oh, yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Not as much as Mike, but still.
Exactly. And Mary, thank you.
Oh, thank you. This was a really fun episode to talk about. I really enjoyed it.
Do you want to promote your artwork?
You can find me at maryogle.com or on Etsy at evisionarts.
Excellent. Definitely, folks. Thank you guys for listening. Stay safe, and we will see you again in 2 weeks. Peace. And we are done. Boom.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
We are the Cigar Nerds Podcast. Do you like cigars? Great! We review cigars while talking about movies, TV shows, science, and pop culture news. What? You don't like cigars? Great, because we also talk about science, movies, TV shows, and whatever's going on in the news. It's what we do. We smoke cigars, and we know things. Find us on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO Network.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.